Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to show 29 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat. I'm your host for this afternoon's show. And if you don't know me, I'm MD and founder of the creative communications consultancy Woodread and a member of the Engage for Success Guru Group. At Woodread, we work with leading blue-chip clients as well as not-for-profit organizations to help them use their brands to drive their employee engagement and create healthy, productive internal cultures. So for us, the brand inside is as important as the brand outside. Now, I'm feeling a bit demob happy this afternoon as I'm off on my holidays tomorrow. But that aside, I have a feeling that this afternoon's show is going to be a fun one as we've got a special guest with us today, Peter Cook. He's HR consultant and author of a number of books, most recently Punk Rock People Management and his latest, The Music of Business. Peter has spent 18 years in science, 18 years in academia, and 18 years running his own business. And for all of those 54 years, music has been a soundtrack and provided a soundtrack to everything that he's done. We're not averse to a spot of rock and roll here at Woodread, so we're looking forward to Peter sharing his own very special take on all things engagement with us this afternoon. So welcome to the show, Peter.
Good afternoon there, Jo.
So, 18 years in science, Peter. Tell me about that, first of all.
Yes, well, lots of consultants I know have never done a proper day's work, but I had 18 years working at the Wellcome Foundation, the only philanthropic pharmaceutical company in the world, an incredibly decent company that actually knew all about engagement, but actually didn't have any of it written down. So we worked hard. We worked like Trojans. We drank like Trojans, and we sort of got a lot done. Wellcome is notable in the pharmaceutical world for having had four Nobel Prizes awarded to it. Very badly managed, I would say, but very well led. And that gives us, I think, a clue to how engagement really works. Sometimes trying to articulate it all in HR, write down what people should be doing, is just the very thing you don't need to do to get things to happen, astonishing things. So we did some amazing things. And I went around the world fixing factories, put the first AIDS drug on the market. That's not marketing, that's scaling out, so we didn't kill anyone, so to speak. And lots of things like that. Fantastic company, really interested in science. So another clue to engagement, everyone was there because they were actually committed to what they did. And somehow, I think some companies have lost their way on that. I don't know quite why. I'll have some clues.
Okay. And it's interesting you talk about academia because I wonder whether you see that science. I mean, is that an area that can be quite difficult to get your employees engaged generally?
Well, scientists like academics will not be managed with sort of extensive spreadsheets and charts. They sort of issue management, really. I think it's a bit of a waste of time. Not all of them, but a lot of them sort of are more interested in what they do than the sort of management of their department and what have you. So, managers have to work more on leading people like that, I think. So scientists generally can't be managed, but they can be led. And if they're all pointing in a similar direction, then good things tend to happen. I know that sounds very simple, but I think it's true.
So this comes back to what you were saying about as an organisation, it wasn't particularly well managed, but it was very well led, and so that
a bit chaotic.
Made the difference.
It was the 70s.
Sorry?
It was the 70s. It was a bit more rock and roll than perhaps 360-degree competence frameworks and appraisals. But astonishingly, by leaving some space in the organisation for people to do what they thought mattered, most of them actually did do what mattered. I think many corporations are over-managed now, and that actually takes the engagement out of them at some level. I think it's very difficult to have engagement and bureaucracy in the same sentence.
No, I can see that. And was it during this same period that you were also involved with the CIPD? Was that at the same time, or was that a bit later on?
No, that was a bit later on. So I, towards the end of my 18 years in Wellcome. Mm-hmm. I worked in the HR department for 4 years, and I sort of bumped into the CIPD, and eventually they found me so irritating and all useful that they decided to make me eventually the branch chair in Kent, because they thought I was quite good at putting on events. I know, you know, I went along, and at that time they would be lucky if they get about 6 people out to the AGM. And I didn't think it was too difficult. I just thought we ought to put on a decent speaker, put it in somewhere, a location where people want to go, and make it a bit more interesting than sitting on a couch watching EastEnders, because that's what you're competing with. So I suppose that really is about engagement. So I didn't sort of have any magic recipe, but I guess what was happening before wasn't very good. And it's just about thinking inside the space of the people coming out after a long day in London or somewhere.
So really, at this point, it was almost like engagement was happening without being called that. It was just that was the way the organisation was led, had the effect of engaging people with what they were doing. They were committed to what they were doing, and so there was a clear narrative. They knew why they were there.
I think it was an understood narrative rather than a clear narrative, but I think most people understood what they were there to do. I think engagement, certainly that phrase hadn't been coined at that time. I think it's relatively new, maybe the last 10 years even. I think the problem comes when people believe that people aren't engaged and then try to shout at them and to be engaged. That itself creates a bit of a problem. And my analogy for this is, if you go into a Wetherspoons pub or any pub for that matter, it doesn't say on the wall, we aim to sort of create cross-functional social networking through the use of mildly depressive alcoholic substances and socio-sexual networking. It doesn't have a mission statement on the damn wall. You know why you've gone in a pub. You've gone in to, you know, to have a drink and whatever. So I think organisations have lost their way. You know, as soon as they've decided they've got to tell people why they're getting engaged, they may be losing their way, and they're, you know, I think engaged organisations find better ways, ways that people understand, perhaps not only intuitively, but they don't tell them that they're engaged. I think that's that really doesn't work for the most part.
Yeah, I think it's one of my big bugbears is people who talk about engagement campaigns as if there's a sort of start and an end point in view. Now, there may well be a start point, but there's never an end point, and it's a kind of way of doing things, isn't it, rather than, you know, tick box exercises.
I do think people need signals to let them know what matters, but if it's a campaign, and it's a campaign that just is for one perhaps trivial thing, then people see through that. People are not daft.
Nonetheless,
campaign-based engagement can be of value, but it is a continuous thing rather than something that's switched off, on and off like a tap.
Absolutely, and can perhaps sometimes be thought of as we've done that, we can tick that box now, we'll move on to the next thing. You know, we've done that for today, or done that for this year, or whatever. So, okay, and then when I introduced you, Peter, I said 18 years in science, then 18 years in academia. So, so moving on to that that part of your life, what was that? What was the 18 years in academia all about?
Towards the end of my career in Wellcome, I became quite interested in management and all this stuff about engagement and why it worked and why it didn't. And the thing to do, I think, rather than just sort of observe it from a distance, I decided I need to learn about it properly. So I went to the Open University and studied their MBA, eventually a diploma and MBA and various other courses over the years. So I actually didn't just know it from my head, but I had some formal knowledge. So, I mean, I'm not exactly dishing formal knowledge. I just think on its own, without sort of the attitude part of business and management, it sometimes ends up with a memo on the wall. So I did, in fact, study the formal courses in management. And to misquote the advert, I liked the courses so much that I decided I had to tutor for them. University. I didn't buy the Open University though, but not yet anyway. Of course, a lot of what you learn on an MBA is theory. And then, of course, if you've got an industrial career, you can compare that theory with reality. And in some cases, the theory matches up to reality. In other cases, it doesn't. And I think the Open University certainly was a formative part of my decision to start my own business and leave an extremely well-paid job, which some people consider a mad thing to do. But yeah, so the Open University, I have a lot of time for in that respect.
And in your experience, to what extent does theory match the reality?
I can't give you a percentage figure
on that.
It's
a big question, isn't it? I know it's a big question.
Yeah, so it's a big question. What you find in organisations that are engaged, you do find that what's talked about is actually what's going on. Even easier to spot is the disengaged organisation, where people talk a lot of stuff, but in fact, people know. They don't have to study an MBA to know when the talk doesn't match the walk. And I do think that's why there's problems with trying to foist engagement strategies onto a workforce that know that things are not going well. I think it actually makes it worse. And if you've ever seen The Office, the TV series, the reason why it's so awfully funny, whether you love it or hate it, is because, of course, it is always an example where good things are said, but different things are done. And, of course, that makes it both appalling and hilarious in the same moment, if you like the series.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, it's the engage for success is sort of say-do gap, really, isn't it? But with a considerable amount of humour about it. Yes, yeah,
but
absolutely.
You can always see when people are doing the right things. And I don't think those things are necessarily too difficult to do. I'm always puzzled as to... Yeah, because the toolkits and textbooks on what to do more or less say the same things. Somehow people don't do them. And you certainly don't need an MBA to work out how to do the basics well. So I had studied the course, I end up teaching on HR strategy. One of the real good things, I think, about engagement that came out of that is it came from someone I got to know, one of the academics in the Open University. He said, great HR directors are really good at the head stuff, sort of being in the air, but the really successful HR directors get down on the floor and see if what's going on the ground actually looks exactly the same as what they think is going on the ground. So I think walking around the business, finding out what's really going on, it's when there's something wrong in engagement, it's because what's being talked about in mid-air, in strategy meetings, is not matched by anything that's going on on the factory floor. I think that's quite a good test, actually, of whether things are going well. So I've learned quite a lot of things from the HR course there.
Yeah, I think that's really true in so many spheres, actually. I remember when I first started out doing what I do now, way back when. I mean, one of the things we would always do when we got a new client on board was to spend a day or two out with their sales guys on the road. And we worked had a lot of pharmaceutical clients at that time. And, we'd spend the day out with the pharma reps going around to the GP surgeries and just observing and listening and getting a feel for what was actually going on. And And it's more valuable than anything, actually, isn't it, sometimes?
You wouldn't be able to be a successful salesperson without touching the ground from time to time. So I'm not sure why people believe they can sit in the HR department and not touch the ground. I think that's one of the clues I took away from my time in HR is the really great people in HR weren't coming up with the HR jargon to sort of exclude them from the business. They were in the business, sort of finding out what was going on and seeing how they could contribute to that. Therefore, they had a relationship with the business. Therefore, they could say terrible things. I don't mean terrible things, but difficult things that the business needed to hear because they've got a relationship. And that's the same in most walks of life.
I think so. So you've taken that sort of thinking and that learning with you when you set up your own business, and you've been doing that for 18 years, is that right?
Yeah, it'd be a real shame when I get to 55, wouldn't it? Because 18 years won't work anymore. That's why I'm 55. It's a bit of a bugger, really. But 18 years running a business. I decided to quit in 1994. And I walked out with no idea what I was doing and started a business called Human Dynamics that did sort of business development, organisation development, coaching and training and things like that. And over the last 10 or so years of that 18 years, I developed this speciality called the Academy of Rock, which does keynotes. And which keynotes with a difference. I mean, people, rather than speaking at you, which I'm doing now, we get the audience to actually get involved in the keynote. They get on stage and sometimes create musical fusion, and we do demonstrations which involve the audience. So it's keynote speaking, but it's participative stuff that actually, dare I say, is more engaging than listening to a speaker. So
yeah,
I think engagement is one of the things I took away.
Okay, and apart from sort of keynote speaking, is that the sort of the main thing that you're doing, or do you also sort of go into to companies and help them to practice what you preach as well?
It's about half and half. I mean, you said at the beginning that I did HR consulting. I actually believe I'm a business person more than an HR person. I get dragged in to do HR stuff from time to time. But I'm more a business person than a specialist. So a lot of the time I'm dragged into I'm not dragged in, I'm asked in, and I politely agree to go in. But I get dragged in for reasons where someone said they haven't got time to deal with the topic. Or more usually it's for what I call their too difficult pile. It's something strategic, humongous. It's been skillfully avoided, and indeed, most people inside the company are a bit too close to it to really be able to see the wood from the trees. So I deal with, I guess, troublesome business problems in business. Not ones where they fall into bits, but ones where they think this is an opportunity. It's too big. We don't know how to get hold of it and what have you. An example would be that I'm off to New York in September with a pharmaceutical company to come up with a bunch of ingenious ideas that will take them into the next sort of decade or so. So that's a sort of, it's not a too difficult problem, but it's one that they feel they need some external help with. So half of my life is doing, I guess, what I call wicked problems, big scale things like that, and facilitating and controlling and nudging and giving input to help them crack the problem. And the other half of my life is doing these keynotes. So they're both as interesting as each other. The one I just, the first one I tend not to use guitars for and what have you, and the sort of keynotes, there tends to be people in wigs and, burning guitars and so on and so forth. But both are just as enjoyable.
Yeah, and so the sort of engagement and employee engagement within what you're doing at the moment, then does that tend to be more within the keynote speeches and so the keynote events, or do you tend to do that within companies too? If the troublesome business is because it's troublesome because they've got issues of disengagement.
Well, absolutely, it's not only the keynote stuff. I will not get the work done in the pharmaceutical company in September if I stand and lecture them about strategy for 2 days. I will only get the work done if they pick up the topics that we've identified, which they at this point don't know. But we will only get the work done if they belong to them by the end of the 2 days, and if they still want to work on them after we've walked out the room at 5 o'clock. So engagement matters, I would say, even more if you're doing what I would call sort of business development or organisation development. So it's absolutely key. Yeah, participation breeds commitment. So if you try and hold a strategy summit for 2 days and you just do a lecture, guess what happens? Nothing much afterwards. So I think engagement matters in every respect in that. And I have a few tricks up my sleeve to get people to think that they own the problem more than I do. In fact, the problem doesn't really matter to me apart from the fact I'm there to do the work and get people to get engaged with it. What I'm concerned about is if people actually grab hold of it and take it away from me, rather than whether I've still got it at the end. It's no good me having it at the end because, I can't do anything about it. So really,
when you're going into an organisation in that kind of role, how do you, if we sort of think back to the sort of the four enablers of Engage for Success, are you able to use those in some, albeit you may call them different things and you may do them intuitively, but those things are still important as far as engaging your audience are concerned, even if you're only going to be involved with them for a short period, I guess. Would that be true?
Well, yeah, I think I would call them different things. In fact, I'm having a little trouble summoning them up right now. But
okay.
I'm absolutely sure from having sort of been to the various conferences that we do them all. I'm absolutely sure of that. But it's just a case of I don't always sort of, I think they're better modelled through behaviour than rather than transmitted through a memoranda, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
So if you do,
yeah,
them,
no, I
they're,
do.
They're infectious.
Absolutely. I do. And so
like
along the way, you were saying.
I was going to say it's rather like catching the disease, really. You're infected by other people's behaviour, for good or bad.
Mm.
And it's about obviously infecting people with good behaviour.
And of course, music does that, doesn't it? Coming full circle back to the sort of the 54-year soundtrack. I mean, music is probably one of the most powerful media we have for being infectious and capturing people and drawing people in. And so, along the way, you've been writing some books and you've been playing music. And I think not your last book, the one before that, Punk Rock People Management, looks at stripping down HR to the bare essentials. And I know one of the things that Engage for Success is keen to try to do is to provide some practical tips and guidance. So I just wonder if as we're coming towards the end of our session, if along the way, along the time in science and academia and running your own business, you've got some practical tips that you've picked up along the way that you can share with us that really make a difference within an organisation.
Yeah, well, as I say, Punk Rock People Management is not about pogoing. It's about simplicity, brevity, and authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple, keep it real, all that sort of stuff. Three tips, I guess. People always think, oh, you end up punk rock. I like all sorts of music. And music is, of course, the language of the senses. So people love or hate music because it engages them or otherwise. So absolutely, music is a good place to start. But if we pick up a couple of sort of, I guess, punky or sort of rocky quotes, Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. Now, Lou Reed didn't mean this at all. He was probably talking about drugs, but, I mean, that doesn't really matter to me. I never let the message get in the way of a good story.
Absolutely.
So Walk on the Wild Side, to me, suggests that one should encourage people to bring all of themselves to work, their brain, their body, their soul, dare I say, and let them actually bring what works well with people at engagement is if they're allowed to bring other talents that perhaps don't appear on the job's description, but perhaps which the organisation can use. So that's a tip stolen from Walk on the Wild Side. From a little-known band called The Boys, it's called It's My First Time. Could have also been Madonna, Like a Virgin. I think induction is so important in terms of getting people engaged or not. If you only have one chance to get the first time right with anyone. So I think when people say, well, we don't have an induction program, or even worse, have a really bad one, where it's all about the health and safety rules rather than making relationships work, then that doesn't work. So it's our first time. It should be all about connecting people with the work. I think the clue about work is the work, and then the people that do the work. So I think day one should really all be about connecting people. So there's a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Go
on then, give us a third one. Yes, go on, give me a third one.
I've got a third one. Reasons to Be Cheerful by Ian Dury, who I love. I actually did the book the other week. Reasons to be cheerful at work are basically down to some good old stuff that's already been written down and doesn't need another research program. You go and look at Hackman and Olden's job parameters in terms of job design. You've got a very good recipe list to actually get people to do good work and be interested in their work. It's all in Punk Rock People Management, and I think we're going to put it up for free on the site somewhere. So if people want to read about that, they can do that.
Oh, excellent. Great. Good. I noticed there's a new exhibition opening just coming up, or has just opened, of Ian Dury's art. Have you heard about that? He was,
I think so you'd mentioned it. Before he became
a musician, he was at art school and was a very prolific and very talented artist. And his daughter's just put on an exhibition of his creative work that he did before he got caught up with rock and roll. So worth a look. Well, I would suggest. But
In the style of Ian Drury, I've just written an Ian Drury-esque song about the economy. I think you might know something about this already, but it has got a sort of Ian Drury lilt to the lyrics.
I think it has, and that was an almost seamless link, wasn't it, really? I almost think we could have rehearsed that, and yet we haven't. So very impressive there. So I was just going to say, you have, I think, just recorded a song with Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist, and it's called Fiscal Cliff. And I was under the impression that you were keeping it up your sleeve for a world premiere on the BBC World Service, but I think we've actually stolen a march on that. And if the technology allows us to, and hopefully it will, actually Engage for Success is going to be able to do the premiere of Fiscal Cliff in advance of the BBC World Service. And we're going to play out the show with that in a few minutes. So before I do that, just a quick look forward to next week's show. Next Monday, the 5th of August, I won't be here. I shall be on a beach in Turkey somewhere. But Joe Dodds will be having a show with Michael Silverman and Reese Actor from Silverman Research, and they're going to be looking and talking about how research into employee opinion is likely to be moving away from the era of surveys and the changes that are going to be coming down the track in terms of emerging technologies and social media and wearable devices and so on. So that's next week's show. So all that really remains is for me to say thank you, Peter, very much indeed for joining us this afternoon. Your book, Punk Rock People Management, as you said, is going to be available to download from the Engage for Success website. The song that we're about to play is available on iTunes along with all great songs. I'll just press the button and it'll go play, I hope, very much. So thank you very much for joining us, and thank you all for listening.
Thine is the credit, the quantitative easing, forever and ever.